Welcome to the Todd Starn Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, hello, America. And what a great Friday it is for freedom and liberty. Hello, everybody. Wow, we have got a jam-packed show. Now, today is Open Line Friday, and we're going to be taking your calls. Here's the rule. Now, during the rest of the week, we make you guys stay on the topic. But on Fridays, we open up the phone line. So whatever you want to talk about, we're going to talk about. If you want to give us a call, 844-747-8868 is our number. That's 844-747-8868. But today is a glorious, glorious day. And I just want to say one thing. Thank you, President Trump. The Supreme Court has done a tremendous job today striking down some pretty awful, awful legislation. The Supreme Court just mere moments ago decided that in a 6-3 ruling that the Biden administration had no authority to cancel student loan debt in this country. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a great day for America. Also today, a landmark ruling regarding religious liberty. In Colorado, which has sort of become ground zero for the gay activists, and they hate Christians, and these activists want to destroy Christians. They do. And it's a terrible thing. I've written a number of books about this, and it's very ugly. Well, the good news is, no more. The Supreme Court today said that Christian business owners, and really all business religious business owners, do not have to create something that would violate their deeply held religious beliefs. In other words, if you are a Muslim baker, you would not be required to bake a cake that slandered the Prophet Muhammad. If you were a Christian and you believe that marriage is between one man and one woman, you would not be required to create anything that would violate your religious beliefs. And that was at the gist of this Supreme Court ruling earlier today, and it is a landmark ruling, meaning that it will impact every single person in this great nation. This was not some sort of a specific court case. This is a landmark ruling that will impact the entire nation. It is a great day, for freedom in America. And it would not have happened had it not been for President Trump and the incredible picks he made to the Supreme Court. So there's some really, really positive things happening as a result of the Trump presidency. Now, we're going to play some audio here. I want to go back to the story about the student loan issue. A lot of people are really riled up on the left. There is a lot of anger right now on the left. As a matter of fact, yesterday during the program, there was a suspicious package left on the steps of the Supreme Court building. They will be trying to bully us. They will be trying to intimidate us. That's what's going to be happening here. But I want you to think about this. I will do my very best to try to explain what the Supreme Court decided when it came to Biden's student loan forgiveness plan. All right. So let's just say hypothetically, we have Seth. And Seth is a mechanic. He is 25 years old, and Seth went to a trade school, right? He went to a vocational school. He learned how to become a mechanic. He paid his own way. It wasn't a lot of money, but he got a job, and he paid his own way. So he got out of trade school. What is it, a one-year, two-year school, debt-free, and now he owns his own garage at the age of 25 years old, and he's fixing cars, and he's living his American dream. On the other side, you've got Jake. Jake is a lawyer, 25 years old as well. Jake went to an Ivy League school, has hundreds of thousands of dollars in student debt, and he is unable to pay back his loans. Now, President Biden and the Democrats believe that Seth, the mechanic, should be obligated to pay Jake, the lawyer's debt. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is pretty much the gist of the student loan bailout plan. To use nearly $500 billion of your hard-earned tax money to erase the debt owed by some 20 million, many of them deadbeat college students. Now, I don't know about you, but I work hard for my money, and I don't want my money being used to pay the student loan debt for some non-binary chick who went to college and got a degree in lesbian pottery literature of the hemp variety. I don't want to pay that, and you shouldn't want to either. And that's what the Supreme Court ruled today was unconstitutional. And they say the administration does not have the authority to unilaterally forgive student loans. And by the way, may I say this? Not only is it unconstitutional, it is un-American. You take out a loan, you are responsible for your obligations. Be a man, take care of yourself. That's the American way. Now, Republicans argued that this whole thing that Biden was up to was just unfair. And it was especially unfair for everybody who actually paid their way through college or repaid the loans they owed or never attended college in the first place. So again, if you can't, but Todd, I really, really want to go to college. I just can't afford, Go to community college. But Todd, nobody wants to go to community college. That's just not cool. Too bad. You're not going to college for it to be cool. You're going to college to learn, to be educated. Pray to God you come out on the other side still knowing your pronouns. No, stop being whiny. Be men, men of America. Be women, women of America. There was a time in this country, I'll never forget this story, years and years ago, there was a college out in West Tennessee. And this is many, many years ago. And there was this one young fella, and he didn't have two nickels to rub together. But guess what? He was a farm kid, and mom and dad sent that kid to college with a cow. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, a cow. A dairy cow. And you know what? The kid paid his way through college by selling milk. I mean, this is a long time ago, back in the 1910s, 1920s, something like that. But you find a way to pay your bills. That's the American way, is it not? You don't want a nation of deadbeats. Oh, it's terrible. It is absolutely terrible. So, Mike, I am just so thankful for the work President Trump did for the judiciary. And I remember years ago telling you that there were two things I loved about Donald Trump. Number one, he was appointing the right kind of judges to the bench. And number two, he embraced the vocational arts. And he told these young people that contrary to what Barack Hussein Obama was teaching, and what was Obama teaching at the time? Well, Obama was teaching that if you don't go to college, then you can't live your American dream. If you don't go to college, there's something wrong with you. You're not going to be able to do anything with your life if you don't go to college. You know why the left wants you and wants your kid in a college? It's because they will be able to control that child. They will be able to brainwash that child. So when your poor child comes home, they're going to have purple hair and they're going to have piercings where God did not intend for things to be pierced, and they're not going to know their pronouns, and they're going to hate America. You don't want that, moms and dads. You don't. Grandmas, grandpas, you don't want that. What was it Barack Obama was saying? They would actually brainwash the kids to come home for Thanksgiving and like strike up a fight, an argument with Uncle Jerry. A very unwise thing to do, by the way. But Donald Trump comes along and said, hey, kids, there's nothing wrong. You don't have to go to college. You know, there are a lot of very successful people that made their mark in this world without even graduating high school. Now, that being said, you should graduate high school. And, you know, if your particular field of study calls for you to get an education, go to college. But do your homework. That's all. Just do your homework. And by the way, I want to say, God bless Nancy Pelosi. Yes, I said it. I know somebody just wrecked their car, but hang on. God bless Nancy Pelosi, because she told all of us back in 2021 that Joe Biden was off his rocker on this one. Cut number 13.
People think that the president of the United States, is this more on the subject than you ever want to know? Will you let me know? People think that the president of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not. He can postpone, he can delay, but he does not have that power. That has to be an act of Congress.
Thank you, Nancy Pelosi. Let me say this. The left right now, they are seething. There is such rage right now. Part of me feels very concerned for the safety of the conservatives on the Supreme Court right now. The left is completely unhinged with the losses yesterday, the cases they lost yesterday, and then today, the alphabet activists are raging, seething. That's what they are right now, because they know there's nothing they can do, nothing at all, nothing at all. I want to play some audio. We're going to do this. Well, we'll do this after the break because it's a bit lengthy, but I want to go back to yesterday with the affirmative action case, and also we had another religious liberty case where the post office tried to force a guy out simply because he would not work on Sundays because that was his Sabbath day. They are raging. The Supreme Court is rock-solid conservative right now, ladies and gentlemen, and that is a good thing for this nation. All right, let's go to the phones here, 844-747-8868. Randy in North Carolina wants to weigh in on the court. Hey, Randy, what you got for us?
Hey, Todd, I'll try to make this quick. I know you got the other. The real big problem with people understanding what the Supreme Court recently did, I mean, you can talk about the injustice of the loans, you know, people that paid their loans are being unfairly treated. But we're no longer even teaching how our Constitution set up the government. People don't understand that Biden has no authority to affect monetary issues. The authority for the purse is given to Congress, and they're the ones who get to decide how tax dollars, how monies are used or collected or whatever. So he doesn't get to act independently to say, I'm going to forgive all these student loan debt. And, of course, it's just more of the leftist ideology of removing accountability and responsibility.
Yeah, Randy, that's exactly what it is. Now, I will say this. Keep in mind that I would say most Americans have no understanding of their constitutional rights and the authority given to the federal government. I would say that most of them have no idea. And that's because the schools are dumbing down our kids, right? We've talked about this before. And the reason why they're dumbing down our population, and it's every single year they do that, is because a stupid population is easier to control. You know, if you don't realize you actually have rights, then you're not going to miss them when they go away. That's right. That's the issue here.
I'm an eighth grade school teacher. I'm currently an eighth grade school teacher and been fortunate to teach American history, but it's amazing what those eighth graders do not know. And I try to get them to understand, if you don't know the rules, how can you play the game?
Are the kids, are they receptive to learning? And what's been their reaction when they realize, holy cow, you know, wow, we've got rights?
Well, some of them do. And I will take slight issue with you a little bit. The Constitution doesn't give us any rights. The Constitution simply protects and restrains government against violating our inherent rights. Just a technical issue there, but that's more specifically. And I try to get my students to understand that. Some do, and as you say, many of them are like, wait a minute, I thought the president had all power, or I thought this. And when they start to see how it's supposed to work, I start asking them, well, does that look like what you see today? And most of them go, no, that's not at all what we see today. So hopefully we're getting a little bit of pushback and making some inroads, but it's amazing what they don't know.
Well, good for you, Randy, and I'm glad you're in the classroom, and we need more people like you teaching these kids. Thank you for that call. 844-747-8868. We do have some breaking news. President Biden, now weighing in, and it was interesting. He specifically weighed in on the religious liberty case. involving a Christian graphic designer. And we're going to tell you about this. That this story is far from over, and we are heading into some dangerous waters. I'll explain all of that coming up after the break. Again, our number on Open Line Friday, 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Stern Show.
If you are looking for MyPillow, you will not find it in the big box stores. And the reason why? It's pretty awful. MyPillow's been canceled by the cancel culture mob. And that's why Mike Lindell wants to sell directly to you. And that comes with some great savings. You're going to be able to get the lowest price in the history of MyPillow for their classic standard pillow. Normally $69.98, now only $19.98 with the promo code STARNS. MyPillow does more than just pillows. They have over 150 products. Everything from sleepwear to slippers, even doggy beds and human beds. Go to MyPillow.com/Starnes. That's MyPillow.com/Starnes. And use the promo code Starnes or call 800-544-8939. That's MyPillow.com/Starnes or call 1-800-544-8939. Use the promo code Starnes.
All right, welcome back to the Todd Stearns radio program. Oh, have you heard about Joe Biden yesterday doing a big interview on MSDNC? And the guy just gets up and walks off. They wrap it up before, instead of staying in place and waiting until the commercial break, the guy just gets up from the TV set, and we've got the video of this. It's very odd. It just starts wandering around. And during the interview, Biden confused the U.S. Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Take a listen.
Some of your former Senate colleagues on the Judiciary Committee would go as far as to say that it's anti-democratic. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, if I say it's anti-democratic, then it gets
in a lot of trouble.
No, but it is. Its value system is different, and its respect for institutions is different, and in that sense, it is not as embracing of all what I think the Constitution says. We hold these truths to be self, that all men and women are created equal, endowed by their Creator. It's the uniqueness of America. We never fully lived up to it. We never walked away from it, and this court seems to say that no, that's not always the case. The idea there's no right of privacy in the Constitution, giving states power that we fought a war over in 1860. I just think it's, this is not your father's Republican Party.
All right, by the way, the Civil War, 1861, Mr. President, 1861, and also confusing the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence there. It's really unfortunate. The guy's just not there. All right, before we go to break, I do want to jump in here, and we'll get into more of this on the other side of the break here. But the Biden administration, President Biden, just releasing a statement, and he is now calling on Congress to move forward with the Equality Act. Now, the Equality Act would prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex, gender identity, and sexual orientation. This would basically set up civil rights just for the LGBT community, and it would literally target any Christian or any church even. So if you are a church, you could be sued if you preach that, for example, homosexuality is a sin. If you preach that, you could be sued under the Equality Act. Now, the good news is there's no way this is getting through the House of Representatives. But if the Democrats retake the House of Representatives in 2024, and Democrats control the Senate, and you've got a Democrat in the White House, oh, you better believe it's going to become law. They are raging mad right now at the Supreme Court. And I don't know about you, but I'm concerned about the safety, not just of the justices, but I'm concerned about President Trump's safety. These people are unhinged, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is the Todd Stern Show.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company. Like super woke.
When I grow up, I want to be hired based on what I look like.
Rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, redballoon.work.
How about old Clarence Thomas? Isn't he great? This guy, he outlawed Roe v. Wade. He gutted affirmative action. He's standing up for religious liberty. How about that? By the way, he was doing one of these interviews, one of these sit-down interviews, and a young lady stepped up to the microphone and wanted to have a conversation with Justice Thomas. Take a listen.
So I don't have a question, but you told me that I could say this when we met on the bus earlier.
I have no memory of this.
Oh, he has a great laugh.
Justice Thomas, I just want to say thank you for achieving and giving us no excuses. You made it to the highest court in the land, and I want to say thank you to all the men that are in this place today. I think that traditional men and masculinity have been demonized so much that in so many areas, men have checked out. So I want to say thank you for taking a stand and leading this country. We appreciate it.
Good for you, young lady. And she's right. I mean, when you look at Clarence Thomas, here's a man's man. I mean, they've said horrible things about Clarence Thomas over the decades, but he ignores it. He goes on about his job, and he doesn't let anybody intimidate him. He doesn't let anybody bully him. Now, ladies of the Todd Stearns radio program audience, I want to have a chat with you. The most beautiful women in all of America listen to this radio program. Beautiful on the inside and the outside. But I have a question for you, ladies. Do you agree with what this young lady just said, that men in America, by and large, have checked out? Do you see what this young lady has seen? And I want to play this again because she raises an interesting point about masculinity in America. You know, we say, you know, if you're not a man, you're a woman. And we're talking about men who are, you know, the soy boys with the man buns. Well, I've got to stop that. I felt bad. I think I've said that a time or two, but I felt bad because that's an insult to women. So they're just weak men. I'm not saying the man bun men are weak men. I'm just using that as an example. But I'm saying that men who do not live up to their obligations, men who are not taking care of their families, men who are on the subway or in some sort of a public setting and they don't step in when a woman or a child is in danger, those men are a disgrace. And I'm wondering, ladies, do you see that in our society? Dylan, let's play. Can we play that again?
So I don't have a question, but you told me that I could say this when we met on the bus earlier.
I have no memory of this.
Justice Thomas, I just want to say thank you for achieving and giving us no excuses. You made it to the highest court in the land, and I want to say thank you to all the men that are in this place today. I think that traditional men and masculinity have been demonized so much that in so many areas, men have checked out. So I want to say thank you for taking a stand and leading this country. We appreciate it.
Maybe that's it. Ladies, are you seeing men taking a stand in America? And how are you raising your sons? Are you raising your sons to be men? I'll never forget, a couple of years ago, there was the raging conversation about toxic masculinity. And people really upset, and most of the folks that were upset, if we can just get real for a moment, are kind of the Mexican Manchu-wearing gals. You know what I'm talking about? They got all the body piercings and the tattoos and they've got the purple hair. Maybe they don't have the best dating life. And I think they're taking out those frustrations on men. And so anyway, they're talking about how, well, we've got the men need to find their inner peace or their whatever. They've got to embrace their feelings. Come on. Nobody wants to embrace their feelings. That's women's work. I'm just kidding. It's just a joke there. Don't send the feminist gals after me. But I remember there was a horrible flood in Houston or somewhere over near Galveston area. And I remember seeing the video, and you might have seen this as well. There was a man. He must have been 6'2", 6'3", big old guy. Could have been a professional wrestler. And this guy is wading into these murky, snake-infested floodwaters. And he's going to rescue a woman and her kids. And so here this guy, and she's hanging on to his back, and he's got the kids, and he's wading through these murky, snake-infested waters. And I thought to myself, I wonder if that lady on his back is giving him the what for because of his toxic masculinity. I wonder. 844-747-8868 is our telephone number. That's 844-747-8868. Let's go to the phones. Troy in North Carolina, WSIC, our great affiliate there. Troy, what do you want to talk about today?
We'll just talk about the transgender a little bit. Here's the thing. All these people that are proclaiming to be transgender, they may be at the end of the day, and they may not be. I don't know. Doesn't really matter. But I know one thing. They're going about what they're trying to do to get their point across in the wrong way. Because all that stuff that they did in Washington, D.C. on the lawn up there at the Capitol building and wherever else, the White House, that's just nonsense. You had a lady call in earlier this week. I listened to that conversation. She was trying to say that her child is transgender at a very early age, and I'm trying to be open-minded to the fact that a child can be born and early on in stages of life, early, like 4, 5, 6 years old, or maybe even earlier, I don't know, just in some ways may think that they want to be a girl when they're a boy or vice versa. Does it make it right? No. At the end of the day, it absolutely does not. But what she was trying to get a point across is that she loves her child no matter what because she's a parent. And that's what we need to do in America is go back to parenting, whether they're gay for to stay or queer in here doesn't matter. But those people that are prancing around naked, they're making maybe legitimate people that are transgender or gay look bad. Does that make any sense?
Oh, absolutely. It makes sense. And we've had several gay listeners call in, and they're just horrified by all this. The problem is that many of them don't want to speak out because then the mob turns on them. But again, this goes back to something we just talked about. Troy, we need men in America to take a stand. I mean, they've called me every name under the book. They throw arrows at me all the time. And you just can't back down from these people. You know what? It's going to be okay. And that's the thing. It's going to be okay. And if people are talking about you, they're coming after you, they're attacking you, that means you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Todd. I think men need to be men and women need to be women. And today's society and social media and stuff like that is just not, it's made it very hard for that to happen because people, you've got some narrow-minded people in this world, and that's just the way they are, and that's probably the way they always will be. But you have to try to have an open mind on all, you know, we're all guilty of putting a question mark where God puts a period. But at the end of the day, God is the one that makes the ultimate decision.
Troy, it's a great call, and thank you for listening to the program today. You know, it's going back to this other Supreme Court case, the one involving this Christian business owner. She ran a graphic design company, and the government in Colorado was saying, hey, look, you've got to, you have to create things. You have to create artwork that might violate your religious beliefs. Now, here's the thing. Let's just say you have a gay man, and he owns a design firm. And you go to this guy, and you say, hey, I need you to create some T-shirts. And those T-shirts say, all gay people are going to you know where. And that's what I want the T-shirts to say. It just seems to me that the owner of that store, who happens to be gay, should be able to say, you know what, I'm not comfortable doing that. And by the way, there are plenty of other graphic design stores or T-shirt shops that you could go to that will design this logo. But that's not what the law says. Now, the law does protect the gay. So the gay business owners in Colorado are allowed to do that. But the Christian business owners are not. And that's where I have a problem. And you're telling me that there are not any other graphic design companies in Colorado that can handle your business? You're going to force the Christian? And by sheer chance and coincidence, you picked the Christian who opposes gay marriage to make your wedding cards or whatever, announcement letters, invitations? You're telling me that was all just coincidental? I don't think it was. I don't think it was. All right, 844-747-8868. That is our toll-free telephone number. That's 844-747-8868. You know, we talk a lot on this program about Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless carrier. We had a caller on yesterday who made the switch and he says he loves it. And I am not surprised, because Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless carrier. They share our beliefs. They're good, hardworking, decent Americans. And that's why I want you to check out the great services they offer. PatriotMobile.com/Todd. You're going to be able to type in your zip code. You'll be able to find out the coverage in your area. And by the way, these guys are great. They have a plan to fit any budget. If you're a veteran or a first responder, they're going to give you an additional discount. PatriotMobile.com/Todd. You can also call them at 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-PATRIOT. Use my promo code Todd, and they're going to give you a special discount and free premier activation. That's PatriotMobile.com/Todd. All right, folks, welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Did you hear this story out of Wisconsin? State Senator very upset. You know, one of the big challenges in Milwaukee, much like San Francisco and Chicago, is that the crime in the city has now spilled over into the suburbs. And rightfully so, people are very upset about that. Anyway, this black state senator from Wisconsin is very upset with all you people that live out in the suburbs. Cut number 7.
The suburbs. Because they don't know a goddamn thing about how life is in the city.
F the suburbs is what she said, and she used the Lord's name in vain. Now, last night in my beautiful town of Germantown, Tennessee, we had a big town hall meeting. Hundreds of people turned out. The district attorney, a radical progressive by the name of Steve Mulroy, was coming out, and he was holding this town hall. Now, it was brutal. The air conditioning wasn't working. It was so hot. We're in the middle of an extreme heat wave. And what I find fascinating, I don't think they turned off the air conditioning. It was sweltering in there. I don't think anybody would do that. No, they wouldn't turn off the air conditioner. But it didn't matter, because people didn't leave, because people are angry. People are furious because of the crime in Memphis. So this Yahoo, Steve Mulroy, man, this guy was rude. He was condescending. It was really sort of despicable. But he's a radical. He used to be a professor. He's a radical leftist. He supports bail reform. And this guy is, I mean, he's just no good. And so anyway, people thought they were going to be able to ask questions, right? So they all show up and they write down their questions. Well, it turns out nobody was actually able to ask the man a question directly. Instead, one of his staff, one of his underlings, she's the one who sort of pre-screened and then sort of rewrote the questions to make Mulroy look good. And these people, look, people are genuinely frightened in Memphis, Tennessee. I want to read something. This is what's happening since January. And this is what happens when you have a radical district attorney. The number of assaults up 5.9%, robberies up 4.8%, murders up 34%. This is just from January to April. Rape up 41%, auto theft. You ready for this one, ladies and gentlemen? Auto theft up 155%. And this guy is completely clueless. They're literally, people are getting arrested, and before the poor cops can finish the paperwork, they're back out on the street again. And this guy, Mulroy, was blaming everybody. He was blaming the cops. He was blaming the mayor. And I think he wanted to blame all of us in the suburbs. As if we don't have a right to say, we don't want crime in our neighborhoods. So somebody asked, you know, well, what's your ideal city here? What are we trying to aspire to be? And the guy actually said we aspire to be in Memphis to be like Chicago. Sweet mercy, America. And he talked about how some of these radical leftist policies were working in cities like Oakland, California, and Stockton, California, and Chicago, where the entire cities are on the verge of collapse. And then he talks about, somebody said, well, what about the victims? Are you doing anything for the victims? And he said, oh, yeah. We don't make the victims sit for hours in court anymore. We give them a call, and then we give them water and snacks. Water and snacks. These people don't want a Nutter Butter, sir. They want justice. So I'm telling you, this is what happens when you elect radical district attorneys. This guy is no better than Alvin Bragg over in New York City. And the criminals know this, which is why they're going out there and stealing cars and causing mayhem, because they know that they've got the district attorney on their side. But the way he treated is just like Barack Hussein Obama. It was that same sort of a vibe. I'm better than you. You people in the suburbs with your nice cars and your nice homes. I despise you. That's what he was thinking. Oh, he was all smiles. This guy, real slick operator, right? But it was you could see it just right under the surface. It was appalling. And people were yelling back. It was a really rowdy bunch. I was so proud of everybody. I mean, people are fired up and they're angry, and they didn't want to take 2 hours of their day in the middle of a heat wave to go and sit there and be lectured to. They want answers, and they deserve answers. So anyhow, I feel bad for you folks in Memphis, but elections have consequences. And all you people in the suburbs, if you're in the Milwaukee suburbs or you're in the Memphis suburbs, get your butt out and vote on election day. Because what's happening in those big cities is going to impact you. That crime is spilling over. These criminals are not stupid. And more importantly, ladies and gentlemen, I would arm yourself. You go, get the classes, educate yourself, learn how to use a gun, and then protect yourself. Because I'm not sure, honest to goodness, I don't think these district attorneys are going to do it. All right, we've got to take a break here. 844-747-8868. That's our telephone number. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
All All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Stearns radio program. What a great day in America and a great day for freedom, a great day for the Constitution. Wow, we've got a lot happening this hour, and I want to go right now to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Great to have with us from the state of Georgia, Congressman Andrew Clyde. Congressman, hope you're doing well today.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. It's always great to be with you.
You know, Congressman, I want to get your reaction to the Supreme Court rulings over the past couple of days. Not only massive victories for freedom and for liberty, but also a reminder of the incredible work President Donald Trump did to really rehabilitate the nation's judiciary system.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You know, this is going to be a testament, and honestly, for President Trump, this is going to be a massive part of his legacy from his first term. What happened this week, today and yesterday, the 29th and 30th, reminds me of June 24th of last year when Roe v. Wade was taken down. And here we have, you know, these incredible religious freedom rulings by the Supreme Court that really starts to put America back on the correct track, the way we are supposed to be, where we're supposed to be, according to our founders and those who created the Constitution itself.
Well, not only that, but then you have the ruling on affirmative action, which effectively guts affirmative action, and now the ruling today on this student loan forgiveness. I mean, these are massive defeats for the left, great victories for conservatives and for the Constitution.
And I'll tell you why the student loan decision is so absolutely critical. Remember back a month or so ago, we had the debt ceiling fight. Okay. And what ended up happening, that agreement, we ended up having an unlimited debt ceiling, but a date. You know, if that means we can spend to infinity and beyond until January of 2025. And why that's so critical is if Joe Biden would have had the authority to forgive, and really it's not forgiving, it's transferring the student loan debt burden from those who borrowed the money to those who didn't borrow the money. If he was actually able to do that for the $465 billion that he wanted to in basically his vote-buying attempt, then what he would have been able to do was to increase that to all of student loan, the debt that's out there, over $1.5 trillion of student loan debt. And then he would have been able to borrow to infinity, just add that to the national debt. And that is why it is so critical that this decision came down the way it did, and that President Biden does not have the authority to do that. Only Congress has the authority to transfer student loan debt.
And from a moral standpoint here, this idea that if you take out a loan, you are responsible for that obligation. You alone are responsible for that obligation. Look at what happened in 2008, Congressman, when you had the housing market crash. Most of the people who got loans could not afford those houses that they purchased, and it nearly tanked the entire economy.
And that just goes to show you why it is so important that people be responsible for their actions. And here you have the Biden administration saying, oh, you don't have to be responsible for the debt that you've taken. We will transfer that to the back of taxpayers. Not a problem. And by the way, vote for me, you know, and I'll do more of it. And you know, that is the moral aspect of that is not lost on America as well. You know, not just the illegal aspect of it, but that's not the way, you know, we teach appropriate lessons of fiscal responsibility to our people.
Congressman Andrew Clyde is on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. You know, Congressman, as we move through the Supreme Court rulings, we also have the big investigations under the involving the Biden family crime syndicate. Congressman James Comer was on Fox and Friends. They really tried to get him to name the crimes that Biden and his family allegedly committed and couldn't quite get him to do that. My question to you is going to be pretty simple. Are we going to get justice here? Are people going to be held accountable?
Oh, I believe we are. And we are seeing more and more evidence of what's coming out. Now, you know, the Biden Justice Department, or what I will call the Injustice Department, is not going to do much, if anything, at all. And we've seen that with what has happened to Hunter Biden, although I don't think that's over yet. I think there's more yet to come there. But you are seeing the corruption of a public official taking money from foreign actors, bad actors, communist Chinese actors, in order for influence on policy, on foreign policy decisions. Same with Ukraine. You had exactly the same situation there, where Biden comes out and says, if you don't fire the prosecutor, you don't get the $1 billion. And then you know now what was happening behind the scenes, that you have payments being made to Hunter and 10% for the big guy. And we all know who the big guy is. So you are seeing that time and time again, where there is money being paid for foreign policy decisions, and that is the ultimate in corruption right there.
On the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line, Congressman Andrew Clyde of Georgia, I'm curious, how big of an issue is that for your constituents? What's the big issue on their minds?
Oh, that's huge for them. You know, we want government accountability here. We want the government to work for us and not the current way that it's being looked at in the executive branch, and that the people work for the government. No, that's not the way our Constitution was set up. That's not the way, not why our country was founded the way it was founded. You know, and here we are on Independence Day weekend, you know, going into July the 4th, and we are seeing all this corruption, and we have to have accountability from our government. If we don't, then, you know, Independence Day doesn't mean very much at all, because we're now turning into a banana republic. So, you know, the people in our district want government to be accountable to the people, and I'm doing everything I can to make sure that happens. And it's great to see these committees working and exposing what needs to be exposed, the corruption of the Biden crime syndicate.
All right. Good stuff, Congressman. Well, we hope you and your family have a great Independence Day weekend and a great celebration there in the beautiful state of Georgia.
Thank you, and same to you and your family, Todd.
All right. Congressman Andrew Clyde, one of the good guys up on Capitol Hill, and you folks in North Georgia, I know, are blessed to have him representing you in Congress. All right. This is Open Line Friday, ladies and gentlemen, and as always, we take your calls. Whatever you want to talk about, we're going to talk about today. Our telephone number, write this down, 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. Let's go to Memphis, Tennessee. Peter is listening to us on KWAM, our flagship station. Hi, Peter. What's going on today?
Well, hello, Todd. I don't know if you heard of the ruling that just came out. It wasn't a ruling. It was a group of advisors, and this is regarding the Moderna and the COVID vaccines. I use the word vaccine lightly because it's not a vaccine. It's a shot. I call it I've always called it. It's just a shot. But FDA advisors and specialists in the field have made a recommendation to FDA to add the lot more warnings onto the shot. The labels of the shot, of both Pfizer and Moderna, and I think most people now are recognizing the truth is starting to come out, that there are a lot of really negative symptoms, myocarditis, a lot of negative health impacts that are very serious. And also, most people, unless you've been, I don't know what cave you've been living in, recognize that the shots do not work to stop COVID. And stop transmission, and doesn't stop you from getting it. But anyway, after this advice was given by experts to and advisors for FDA, FDA has refused to make any changes to the labels for those shots. And it just seems to me, I would have thought by now that this the follow the money scheme would finally be realized by most people, and they'd want to try to do better there. But it's apparent that they are that they just are not willing to let the truth come out.
Peter?
And it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, Peter, to your point, the FDA did add a heart inflammation warning to both Moderna and Pfizer vaccine fact sheets. Well, a lot of good that's doing people right now. And Peter, I am one of those individuals. As you may know, I own KWAM. And we told our staffers early on in the pandemic, look, you do you. If you listen to your doctor, we're not going to tell you whether or not you should get the shot or not. That's between you and God and your doctor. And I think our staff actually appreciated that. And I followed that practice as well. My doctor said, hey, you know what? You've got a heart condition, so you need to go ahead and get that vaccine. And I got the Moderna vaccine. Peter, 2 days later, I was in the ICU at Baptist East, and I was dealing with a case of myocarditis. So I was one of the lucky ones, because a lot of people who got that vaccine have dropped dead. And, you know, you can read into that whatever you want to read into it. I'm not sure we've gotten all the answers, but I can tell you this, Peter, it scared the living daylights out of me.
Oh, I bet. And I sent, RFK, now he is not even close to the political lean that I am. He is completely, but you listen to him and his knowledge about, and he's called a vaccine denier. And that Joe Rogan podcast he did was just amazing. I sent a clip of that Joe Rogan podcast to my family members that are professionals in the healthcare field. And I said, you know, if what you believed, if what you stated your career on, if you found out that that wasn't true, would you want to know? And I, you know what? Unfortunately, I think a lot of people don't want to know. That's just amazing to me.
Peter, it's a lot of great intel and information, and I love what you do. You're doing a lot of reading. You're doing a lot of listening, and that's what it's all about. And we appreciate you calling, and give us a call back one of these days. And thank you for listening to our flagship station, KWAM. So the CDC tracked more than 1,200 cases of myocarditis and pericarditis through June 11th. More than 820 of those cases occurred after the second dose of the vaccine. 65% of the cases linked to the Pfizer vaccine. And get this, the greatest number of the cases occurred in men under the age of 24. And what were they telling us? All these years, they were telling us it was just a coincidence that all these young, healthy, athletic boys were either having heart attacks or just dropping dead on the playing field. I'm telling you, folks, I'm telling you, this is probably going to be the greatest scandal of our lifetime. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, heading right back to the phones, 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phones on this Open Line Friday, 844-747-8868. Susie in Georgia, WDUN. Susie, what's on your mind today? Hello, Susie. All right, well, let's put Susie on hold, and we'll get back to Susie in a moment. Let's go to Thomas in North Carolina. Hi, Thomas, what's going on?
Hey, Todd, thanks for taking the call. Well, just a couple of questions or comments regarding the celebration of 4th of July. You know, recently the Durham report came out concerning the situation with Biden and all the different things going on. It's obvious that there's a lot of delay in order to let statutes or limitations run out and so forth. Anyway, it's undeniable that there's an incredible amount of corruption in the present administration. Furthermore, there's tampering in federal elections by national intelligence and law enforcement agencies, the FBI, CIA is involved on all kind of different levels. Then you take the fact that added all together, most middle-class income families pay nearly half of all their income in taxes. the Kelo decision of the Supreme Court ruled that private property can be confiscated and given to another private entity as long as local government can demonstrate that it can increase the tax base. The NSA and other federal intelligence agencies are constantly monitoring and recording all electronic communications. The FBI has been shown to, in cooperation with the post office, reading everybody's mail. The United States has tampered and effectively caused the war in Ukraine, is responsible for the blood of untold hundreds of thousands of people on both sides in that conflict as a result of the corruption and bribery of the Biden crime syndicate, and America is more or less being ruled by a criminal oligarchy. So I just pose the question, what exactly are we celebrating at 4th of July?
Well, I'm celebrating the Founding Fathers' original intent. That's what I'm celebrating, Thomas. And in spite of where we are right now, and it's a mess, no doubt about it, it's a mess, but it's still the greatest country on the face of the earth, at least in my mind it is. And I
would argue that we should celebrate and venerate the sacrifice of those that were in the past, but that is the past. The America that exists presently, when we celebrate the 4th of July, we often say we threw the British out. Well, no, the United States was British. We didn't throw the British out. We overthrew the government and ordained a new government. Well, in the subsequent 250-plus years, the government that replaced the original government is more tyrannical and corrupt than the one that was replaced. The chokehold that is on the American people by these intel agencies and this tyrannical technological terror that we're under far surpasses the evils.
Well, Thomas, I've got about 20 seconds here. Do you believe that we were better off under British rule than we are today?
The conditions that the colonists were living under were far less tyrannical than what we have today in reality. The British, and again, I say the colonists were British. The government at that time wasn't trying to murder its own civilian population through the use of a fake pandemic and cooperating with communist Chinese labs to orchestrate.
All right, Thomas, that's more than 30 seconds. So we've given you about almost 4 minutes here. So appreciate the call. Folks, Thomas says that we're facing more tyranny now than we did when we were under the British and under British rule. What say you? 844-747-8868. That's our telephone number. This is Open Line Fridays. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back, everybody. President Biden says he's going to be talking to the nation here in just a little while. We'll let you know when that happens. The Michigan House of Representatives has passed a bill that would make using the wrong pronouns a felony. You could also face prison time and a $10,000 fine. The Michigan State House of Representatives passed House Bill 4474. It criminalizes causing someone to feel threatened by words. So if you feel threatened by a word, let's just, I don't know, we'll say, for example, I'm a big University of Tennessee football fan. If you say, Todd, how about Alabama? Go Bama or whatever, the Roll Tide. And I would be triggered by that, right? I could feel threatened by that. So that would make that a crime in Michigan. I jest, of course. Go Big Orange. Under the new bill, offenders are guilty of a felony punishable by imprisonment for not more than 5 years or by a fine of not more than $10,000 if you mispronounce someone. Intimidate means a willful course of conduct involving repeated or continuing harassment of an individual. I'm reading this a law here. That would cause a reasonable individual to feel terrorized, frightened, or threatened. Todd, come here. Try this tofu salad. Oh, somebody's going to jail. I feel threatened. The bill specifically addresses sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes. Now, this goes back to the Equality Act that Congress is trying to pass. Imagine something like that on a national scale, where your preacher could literally be removed from the pulpit if they preach something that might offend a member of the LGBT community. This is why the Equality Act can never become the law of the land. So there you go. In Michigan, yet another reason to leave that state. But here's a word of advice. If you come to Tennessee, leave your politics back home, please. If you don't mind, just leave your politics at home. I want to go back to the affirmative action case. There was an incident over on CNN where Abby Phillips was interviewing an Asian American student activist. And they were going back and forth over the Supreme Court decision to gut affirmative action. Now, I want you to understand what's going on here. Back during the Civil War era, there was only one political party that wanted to free the slaves. That was the Republican Party. Back in the 1960s, when Martin Luther King Jr. was marching in the streets and writing from the jail in Birmingham, there was only one political party that was standing up for civil rights, that wanted to give blacks the right to vote, that wanted to eradicate Jim Crow. There was only one party. That was the Republican Party. The Democrats, they wanted to keep black people in chains. And they wanted to do that in the 1960s. That's why you had the Dixiecrats staging a filibuster in the Senate to stop the Civil Rights Act from being implemented. By the way, many of your famous or infamous, rather, KKK leaders happen to be Democrats. Democrats. I know this triggers a lot of people out there, but it's important, very important for us to get the facts straight. So anyway, now here we are, years later, and you have once again the Democrats trying to segregate Harvard and UNC. But it's not the blacks, now it's the Asian Americans. And they don't, the Democrats don't want Asians going to Harvard or any of the Ivy League schools. That's it. They are segregationists. But leave it to the Republicans to once again stand up and fight for the disenfranchised, just like we did for black Americans in the 1960s. We are doing that for Asian Americans here in the 21st century. And I think that's a wonderful thing. But you are literally seeing people on the Democrat side of the aisle. And by the way, it's not Democratic, right? I hate it when people, it's the Republican and Democratic Party. There's nothing Democratic about the Democrats. They are the Democrat Party. But it's mind-boggling to see the Democrat Party in this day and age try and justify discriminating against Asian American people. Cut number 11, this is CNN's Abby Phillips.
Much. And I want to bring in now Kenny Hsu, president of Color Us United, a group that advocates against affirmative action. He's also a member of the board for Students for Fair Admissions. That's the group that brought this case against Harvard and the University of North Carolina. Kenny, thank you for joining us. So today's ruling obviously is one that you were hoping for, arguing that the rules in place that support affirmative action were unfair to Asian Americans. So from a practical perspective, how does today's decision help Asian American students looking to get into elite colleges?
I just want to say I'm ecstatic about this decision. It means that Asian Americans can finally get treated on their merits. Guys, we know why Asian Americans should get into Harvard at disproportionate rates. It's because they study twice as many hours as the average American. It's not because of their race. It's because of their culture. It's because of their family values. Academic excellence, that should be prioritized. Those should be the values that schools like Harvard and Chapel Hill, supposedly elite schools and academic programs, should be valuing in an applicant, not race.
So you've argued also that Harvard and other colleges should get rid of their legacy admissions, which also gives people points for having a parent that went to that school. That's not happening here. I wonder why not challenge that, which is also presumptively an obstacle for Asian Americans being treated fairly in the admissions process.
Well, I hope you followed the case, but Students for Fair Admissions has challenged legacy admissions repeatedly over and over again. In fact, we argued that the way that Harvard could implement some of their diversity policies without discriminating against Asian Americans is to get rid of legacy admissions, which, as you know, disproportionately privilege white applicants. In fact, 33% of Harvard students who are white are legacy, and they have a 5 times more likely chance of getting in if you are legacy. So you really want to ensure diversity in admissions? Get rid of legacy admissions.
You heard today President Biden expressing some concerns over socioeconomic factors and inequality being made worse given this decision. He also presented what he called basically a way forward. I wonder if you take race out of the picture and you do what the president is suggesting, taking socioeconomic status into consideration, do you think that that would be fair to Asian American students as well?
No, I don't. I think that admissions should be only based on merit. And the reason why is because you can't, why are we asking a university to calculate somebody's level of adversity? I think that that sets a very bad precedent for anybody trying to get into college. We should be treated on the basis of our merits. We should be treated on the basis of how hard we work, our study, our SAT scores, our grades. A name-blind, race-blind process is what I would advocate for as president of course.
Kenny, can I ask you, though? I mean, colleges, yeah. Obviously, they care about grades and SAT scores, but they also are filling universities of people, human beings, who have other factors that they bring to the table. Why is it not okay for them to consider those things?
I'm saying if you're going to consider those things, you should consider them without respect to race.
Sure.
So as you know, a lot of Asian Americans.
I think that that's exactly right. But socioeconomic status doesn't. If you take race out of it, let's call it socioeconomic status, where whether or not they grew up wealthy or poor, is that not something that colleges might have an interest in considering?
The reason why you shouldn't consider that is because you should consider the success of an applicant. Because of affirmative action, Black Americans graduate from law school at the bottom 25% of their classes, largely speaking. And we don't want that. We want Black students to succeed. We want every student to succeed, low-income students to succeed. But you have to put them in scenarios, in places where they're likely to succeed. And lowering your standard to admit somebody of a socioeconomic status or race would not help them do that. In fact, it would harm their graduation rate and excellence.
Well, as the case also points out, the standard isn't necessarily lowered because the students are all admitted. It's the question is whether race can be an added consideration, a tipping point.
No, the standard is lowered. The standard is lowered. Standard is lowered. As the student premier admissions data shows, an Asian has to score 273 points higher on the SAT to have the same chance of admission as a Black person. So the standard is lowered for Black Americans.
Kenny Hsu, thank you for your perspective. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Oh, wow. Gee, you know, there were people freaking out in the master control room saying, cut, go to commercial. He can't say that. That was a truth bomb. But that's ultimately what this is all about. And it was that standards were lowered for people based on the color of their skin. Is that right? Is that fair? The Supreme Court said not right, not fair, unconstitutional. Can you imagine, though, the number of Asian American students that have been busting their butts and they have to score 273 points higher than the Black applicant to even be considered for admission at Harvard? I mean, that is racism right there, ladies and gentlemen. It is. All right, got to take a break. 844-747-8868. That is our toll-free telephone number on this open line Friday, 844-747-8868. Have you been watching Newsmax TV, ladies and gentlemen? What a great lineup of conservatives, Rob Schmidt, Eric Bolling, Chris Plant. Americans are watching Newsmax for the real news that you can trust. And now Newsmax wants you to vote in their brand new national poll. They are asking about President Trump. Do you believe the indictment is a political act? Text the word Trump to 39747. That's Trump to 39747, and you can vote right away. Make sure your voice is heard. Newsmax is now America's fastest growing cable news channel. So be sure to tune in now for the latest on Trump and vote in the poll. Text the word Trump to 39747 and let your voice be heard. All right, welcome back to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. I have a question. All you Gen Zers, just put something in your ears for a moment. This is from thehill.com. Daniel DeVise is the author. Three quarters of bosses find Generation Z workers a trifle difficult. That's according to a corporate survey, resumebuilder.com. I have Gen Zers working for me across the glass, by the way. 74% consider Gen Z employees more challenging than older staffers. Pressed for specifics, the employers did not mince words. Quote, they think they're better than you, smarter than you, more capable than you. Gen Z is the youngest cohort in the American workforce, with birth years starting around 1997. Many surveys and studies have labored to define them. The findings suggest they have not gone quietly into their cubicles. So that's a clever line. A Gallup report termed them generation disconnected, noting that Gen Z is less likely than older generations to be actively engaged in work and more likely to suffer stress and burnout. Guys, y'all are suffering from stress and burnout over there? Dylan shaking his head yes. A study by McKinsey and Company, the management consultancy group, found Gen Zers restless in their jobs, more likely to report hostile work environments and health problems, both physical and mental. You need a shrink, Dylan? We can get you work. We have a health plan for the company. Three quarters of Gen Z employees said they were actively seeking other jobs. Wait, what? In the new survey taken in April by the survey platform Pollfish, half of employers said they find it difficult to work with Generation Z most of or all the time. Two-thirds said they are more likely to fire Gen Z workers and older staffers, sometimes in the first week of employment. Wow. Have you found this to be the case, ladies and gentlemen? Are Gen Z workers too hard to work with? 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. The top reason for firing Gen Z workers? According to the survey, Generation Z is too easily offended. Oh, I believe that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Managers said they struggle with Generation Z workers for other reasons: lack of motivation, lack of productivity, poor communication skills, short attention span, pay attention, Dylan, an excessive sense of entitlement, occasional dishonesty, too few technological skills, or too many. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Quote, I butted heads more than once with a Gen Z employee. Since our company is online-based, they think they know everything about the digital world and they can teach me. That's a fair point. I tried to do the TikTok, but, you know, then I found out what China was up to, and I thought the best of it. And I tried Snapchat, but I can't figure out how to snap or chat. It's all very confusing. Many Generation Zers entered the workforce at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. They lacked FaceTime and human contact at a foundational moment in their careers. Dylan, turn your microphone on. I have some questions for you.
Yes.
So you're a Gen Zer, is that right?
That's right.
All right. So do you find this to be true? And not you, because you're a good, hard worker, or you wouldn't be employed here on this program. But by and large, do you see some truth in this report from thehill.com?
I can see it to be true. Yeah. I mean, we're on our phones, Gen Z. We grew up in that world. So, I mean, with the whole attention span thing and getting frustrated and burnt out, yeah. That's what we've been growing up with.
Why? I don't understand. That generation, you guys kind of have it made.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's just the whole not really appreciating what you have and kind of taking advantage of the whole technology world and getting lost there.
See, the millennials, the generation that's just older than you, the generation ahead of you, those guys are all about titles. You know, they want the title on the office door. I mean, it's not even about salary for those people. They just want a title.
Yeah.
They don't seem to understand you've got to work years to get that title.
Yeah, I think Generation Z has big dreams, but they don't know how to work, or they don't want to work to get there.
Do you guys sit around just, you know, when you're out, I don't know, just hanging out and saying, golly, what's wrong with us? Do you guys do that?
Yeah, but doesn't everybody?
No, not really.
Should we be doing it the most? Like, what's wrong with this generation?
Maybe we should get a staff psychologist.
I think so. I think that's a good investment.
All right. We'll work on it. Because we have a lot of Gen Z workers here, but everybody works hard. I think we got the cream of the Gen Z crop.
I agree.
That's what I think. All right. Thank you, Dylan. Appreciate that. Interesting. So I'm curious, ladies and gentlemen, are you finding this to be true, that Generation Z, they're just hard to work with? Difficult employees. That's the headline over at thehill.com. 844-747-8868, toll-free number. By the way, head over to toddstearns.com, and we have some great resources for you there, stories, videos, and, of course, our podcast and newsletter. Those come out every single day, and they're free resources. We would love for you to check those out. All right, hang tight. We're going to go live to the Moms for Liberty convention in Washington. Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump scheduled to speak, and we'll tell you all about that as well. Hang tight, everybody. Hour 3 of the Todd Stearns Show coming up.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Stearns.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. Happy Friday to you. Wow, what a great day. This has been a great week for America. And just a reminder again of the greatness of the Trump administration and the great work that Donald John Trump did for this country in just 4 years. The guy was facing brutal attacks from his own political party, the Democrats, the deep state. And yet, man, he fought for us and he delivered, which is why we're celebrating these remarkable Supreme Court victories. So, again, thank you, President Trump. We thank you. And I'm excited. I really am excited about what another term in office could do for this country. And I hope you're excited as well. By the way, new polling data is out, and it is not looking good for Ron DeSantis. DeSantis is just having a rough go of it. Even for the younger voters, people under the age of 45, Trump leads DeSantis by 50 points. I mean, it's really remarkable when you look at the level of support that President Trump has across the board. New York Magazine summed it up nicely, I thought. And I know they're a far leftist publication, but every now and again, they get it right. And here's the headline. DeSantis is trying to out-Trump Trump. It's not working. And it's a fair point. Somebody needs to tell DeSantis, be yourself. Just be yourself. Are you boring? Okay, well, you can be boring as long as you're yourself, right? I mean, he's trying to mimic everything about Donald Trump, including the way he uses his hands in speeches. I mean, it's as if he's just spent his time watching Donald Trump over and over and over and over again so that he can actually become Trump Jr. The Associated Press reports that Ron DeSantis is arguing that he is the Trump alternative. But the problem is he's trying to become Trump. And that's the problem. That's why it's not working. And now you've got all of these supporters of his on social media. These people are worse than the Democrats. Real nasty bunch. Very nasty bunch of folks. So anyway, the polling data, all looking good for Trump. There was a smidge of a dip after the indictments came out, but it's looking pretty good. Looking pretty good. And by the way, Trump says he may skip that first Republican debate, the one with Fox News. Do you think that's a good idea? Would you like to see Donald Trump debate? I would love to see him debate. I know that, look, when you're in politics and you're that far ahead of the competition, there's a reason why you don't debate, but I think he has to, and I think he should. What say you? 844-747-8868. That's our toll-free telephone number. It's also Open Line Friday, so you can talk about whatever you want to talk about today. 844-747-8868. Now, New York City Mayor Eric Adams, this guy is a nasty piece of work. And people are very upset about the way he's been running the city, and especially the Rent Guidelines Board. Now, what's fascinating is that this particular board determines how much landlords can raise the rents. And specifically, there are what they call rent-stabilized apartments. And some people are not paying that much money for a monthly apartment in New York City. So anyway, they're debating all of this, and people are very upset. And there was a Jewish lady who raised some concerns. Now, you need to understand this because there is a racial component here to this story. So Eric Adams is a black dude. This woman is white, and she's asking a legitimate question. And the mayor, and she's pointing at the mayor. In New York City, this is not anything weird. I mean, he's sitting up at the platform. She's at the microphone, and she's giving him the what for by pointing at him. And the mayor was having none of it. And here's how all that sounded.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about the Rent Guidelines Board. You said before and after that you supported those rent increases. In Nassau, they had a 0% rent increase. Why in New York City, where the real estate is controlling you, Mr. Mayor, why are we having these horrible rent increases last year and this year?
Okay, first, if you're going to ask a question, don't point at me and don't be disrespectful to me. I'm the mayor of this city, and treat me with the respect that I deserve to be treated. I'm speaking to you as an adult. Don't stand in front like you treated someone that's on a plantation that you own. Give me the respect I deserve and engage in a conversation up here in Washington Heights. Treat me with the same level of respect I treat you. So don't be pointing at me. Don't be disrespectful to me. Speak with me as an adult because I'm a grown man. I walked into this room as a grown man, and I'm going to walk out of this room as a grown man. I answered your question.
All right. So this guy compares her to a plantation owner. Basically, he's insinuating that she's a racist and that she doesn't like black people. And of course, the mayor being black, well, you can extrapolate. So it turns out this woman actually fled Nazi Germany back in the day. She was originally from Belgium, and her parents fled the Nazi regime in Germany. After hiding out in Belgium and France throughout World War II, she and her parents immigrated to New York City when she was 8 years old, and she's lived in the Big Apple ever since. She is a volunteer tenant organizer since 1960, and she's the chairperson of the Neighborhood Association. And she's pretty upset by all of this. But the city hall, when they were given all this other information, they said, oh, she's 84 years old, and she is an assistant professor of biology at Rutgers. So the city hall says we stand by the mayor's comments. All right, well, I'm curious, why would you stand by the comments when this woman is not a plantation owner? She fled the Nazis during World War II. And why is it that every time a white person takes an issue and by the way, you heard the woman, did she say anything that was inappropriate? I don't think she called the mayor any sort of racially charged language. But this mayor, I'm due respect. You better respect me because I'm the mayor. You can't say anything about me because I'm the mayor. I will throw you in jail, woman. White woman. Don't you be talking to me like that, you white woman. You think you some kind of plantation owner, white woman? It's like, whoa, Mr. Mayor. Let's go back. I want to just listen to what this woman said. Did you hear anything that sounded remotely racist about what this 80-some-odd-year-old survivor of the Nazis had to say? Let's play it again, Dylan.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about the rent guidelines in Florida. You said before and after that you supported those rent increases. In Nassau, they had a 0% rent increase. Why in New York City, where the real estate is controlling you, Mr. Mayor, why are we having these horrible rent increases last year and this year?
Okay, first, if you're going to ask a question, don't point at me and don't be disrespectful to me. I'm the mayor of this city, and treat me with the respect that I deserve to be treated. I'm speaking to you as an adult. Don't stand in front like you treated someone
you
that's on the plantation
you,
that
you mean
own.
To me.
Give me the respect I deserve and engage in a conversation up here in Washington Heights. Treat me with the same level of respect I treat you. So don't be pointing at me. Don't be disrespectful to me. Speak with me as an adult because I'm a grown man. I walked into this room as a grown man, and I'm going to walk out of this room as a grown man. I answered your question.
I'm a grown man. I'm the mayor of New York City, and I'm a grown man. I haven't hit puberty yet, but I'm a grown man. You be nice to me. Really? I mean, come on. Come on. A lot of people really upset because this woman is apparently a revered character in this, in this community, and she was really treated disrespectfully by the mayor of New York City, who clearly has thin skin. All right, let's go to the phones here. 844-747-8868. Tracy in Memphis, Tennessee, listening to us on KWAM, wants to weigh in on that Trump debate. All right, Tracy, what say you?
Hey, I'm just as silly as you are sometimes, and I tell you, you have fun at work. You don't work hard, though. I heard you earlier saying you work hard. You have a fun job. That's not hard work.
It is fun.
But look, so Trump, please, if he's listening, do the debate. I mean, you're winning. You've already won, so at least give us some type of excitement, you know? And I can get a couple of laughs in at least. You know, I really love to hear him talk. I do.
So, you know, I'm with you, Tracy. But what's really funny is Chris Christie would not be eligible for the debate stage. In spite of all of his bluster, he doesn't have the numbers to qualify for the debate.
Oh, I would love to see those two debate. Oh, my gosh.
That would be entertaining.
Right now it's an entertainment point. I mean, if he's winning, great. I mean, at least do the debate. So give us some excitement, please. Thank you. Bye.
I love it. All right, Tracy, appreciate that telephone call, and thank you for listening. By the way, want to play this audio from Berkeley, the UC Berkeley. And even though the Supreme Court has made this ruling that abolishes affirmative action, it's not over. It's not over. This is a dean speaking to students at UC Berkeley. His name is Erwin Chemerinsky. Cut number 10.
What I mean by unstated affirmative action is, what if the college or university doesn't tell anybody, doesn't make any public statements, but still wants to? I'll give you an example from our law school, but if ever I'm deposed, I'm going to deny I said this to you. When we do faculty hiring, we're quite conscious that diversity is important to us. And we say diversity is important. It's fine to say that. But I'm very careful when we have a faculty appointments committee meeting. Anytime somebody says, you know, we should really prefer this candidate or this candidate because this person would add diversity, don't say that. You can think it. You can vote it. But our discussions are not privileged. So don't ever articulate that that's what you're doing. Well, that works more easily with regard to faculty hiring. With regard to student admissions, it becomes more difficult because it's a statistical measure.
All right, there you go. You can't trust these people, I'm telling you. Let's go to Jeff in Georgia. WDUN wants to weigh in on the New York City mayor. Hey, Jeff, what you got for us?
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. The rhetorical question is, would the mayor have made that statement to that lady if she had not been white? would he have said that to an Asian or Hispanic or an Indian American or a black African American lady? No, he would not have. Therefore, his statement was based strictly upon her race, which makes it a racist statement. The whole grounds of his statement, being offensive as it is, was based upon her being a white female. As far as unity in this country, there's never going to be unity in this country as long as the discrimination toward whites continues such as it is. A white person cannot openly make a statement such as that. If Rudy Giuliani, when he was mayor of New York City, had addressed a non-white that same way, they would be burning down the streets. They would be trying to remove him from office. They would have a special election. But it happens every day in this country, the opposite, and nothing is done about it. If a white person were to be openly politician, celebrity, were to be openly racist, such as the mayor was in that statement, and as offensive as he was, they would be blacklisted. They would be boycotted. They would be swatted. Their information, their kids' school information would be put on the internet, and they would be terrorized. But it continues when non-whites are doing it to whites.
Well, Jeff,
mostly
I need to...
Democrat run cities.
Jeff, I need to take you to task. You're not allowed to say blacklist anymore. That's inappropriate. We're going to have to, you know, we're not going to ban you from the show, but, you know, we can't say blacklist.
Right.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned this because I would throw Asian Americans in there. I think if this woman had been Asian, I think the mayor would have done the same thing. But I want to go back to this was 2006. Eric Adams was serving in NYPD, and he was giving a speech in 2019 to a bunch of black business leaders in Harlem. And this is the exact quote. He was talking about how he loved to give white police officers a hard time. All right. And this is the quote. This is from Politico.com. This was February the 4th, 2022 is when this was published. And he said, every day in the police department, I kicked those crackers' ass. Now,
I'm not surprised.
Imagine, again, to your point, imagine if those races had been reversed, he would not be mayor of New York City right now.
Right. There's not going to be unity in our country, and we're not going to actually address the problem with systemic racism, the actual racism in our country, the crime in the Democrat minority-controlled cities across this whole country, nearly every Democrat city. Crime is out of control.
Yep.
Poverty's up.
Yep.
Homelessness is up. Drug abuse is up. Overdoses are up. And then it just puts a strain on the medical system. It puts a strain on the public safety, EMS, fire,
Jeff,
we law got, enforcement.
It does. It does. Yep. And we got to run. But it is open season right now on white folks in New York City. Jeff, appreciate that call. We'll be right back. Trying to figure out the Stearns family Independence Day plans. I think everybody, I don't know. Are we going to Germantown for the fireworks, Dylan?
It's a great spot over there.
It is a great spot. You need to email your aunt and your mom, and we need to figure this out. So last year, I got the call like the day before. Everybody's coming over to your place. And I'm like, oh, gosh. I had to go to the Kroger. Never had more food in the fridge than that day. So anyway,
you're a great host.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. Okay, so what are you doing, ladies and gentlemen? What are you doing for the 4th of July? Is there a tradition? I know a lot of people are out there having the picnics and the parties. It's like 120 degrees here in Memphis, so whatever we do will be inside. The picnics will be inside this year. Let's go to Steve in Georgia. WDUN wants to talk about the 4th of July. Hey, Steve, what you got for us?
Okay, good segue. The 4th of July for me has to include, honor before the day, the watching of something called Our Lives, Our Fortunes, Our Sacred Honor, a video by Paul Harvey, which outlines, details what happened to all the signers of the Declaration of Independence. Obviously, the king was more than irritated, came after them with a vengeance. And if everybody would watch that and have their children and their grandchildren watch it with them, I think that would be really good for when these people on the left, the sinister crazies, come after them at a very young age or got to them already. And as a reminder of why we're even celebrating the 4th of July, why we're talking about barbecues, why we're talking about a day off and all of these things. And so I'm asking you, Todd, thanking you for taking my call on Open Line Friday, because the 4th is next week. And
it is.
Talk show
and Steve, we're gonna play that for you. We're going to put that on the website. That's a great Paul Harvey video. We'll be right back. Appreciate it.
Been actively involved in rejecting textbooks that have ideological indoctrination. And unfortunately, you've seen woke in math books. Some of these social studies books were totally off their rocker. So we raise the objection, send them back. And guess what happens? Because we're an 800-pound gorilla, they make the appropriate changes to the textbooks. So we're winning on that issue.
All right, that was Florida Governor Ron DeSantis earlier this morning. He was speaking at the 2023 Joyful Warriors National Summit. That's going on right now, and you can get information at momsforliberty.org. That's momsforliberty.org. Want to go to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. One of the co-founders of Moms for Liberty, Tina Deskovich, joins us. And Tina, I know you're swamped, but we appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your schedule.
Oh, I appreciate it. It is, it's an exciting time at our national summit right now.
And of course, President Trump as well. When do you guys hear from the former president?
We should be hearing from him about 4 o'clock today.
4 o'clock. And I'm curious, I know Governor DeSantis spoke earlier. We played a sound bite from him. How was he received by the moms?
Our moms really love Governor DeSantis, at least most of them do. We were based out of Florida, and everything that we went through with COVID with him, standing by us and supporting parental rights and protecting parents and kids and getting schools open. So we have a good relationship with Governor DeSantis. So he was very well received.
And I have to imagine President Trump's going to get a nice welcome this afternoon.
Oh, of course he is. I mean, the excitement level around here is just building right now as people are hustling and bustling for that.
All right. I want you to set the scene for us. How many folks do you guys have there? And tell us a little bit about the summit.
Oh, it's just amazing. I know that's just a generic term, but we have about 650 moms and some dads and grandparents here. It's almost a 4-day event. Last night we kicked it off at the American Museum of the Revolution. We were welcomed by hundreds of protesters, but luckily Philly PD kept us safe to and from the museum. Today we've got protesters across the street, a good amount of them. I hear they're in a few locations around the city, but all in all, everything's going smoothly, and it's a really great event filled with a lot of education.
I think what I find fascinating about Moms for Liberty, what a great group, and the work that y'all are doing all over America is making a difference, and I think that's why the left is so terrified, because the moms of America have woken up.
Absolutely. Most of our moms are not political people. You know, I think 40% of them have never voted in a primary. We are just moms that are just frustrated by what we're seeing. We're frustrated by, you know, schools that were closed. And now when you see the national test scores come out by failing schools, kids in America can't read. Two-thirds of fourth graders are not reading on grade level. So, moms have had enough. They're stepping up. They're speaking out. And it's making a difference.
I know you guys are getting a lot of blowback. Southern Poverty Law Center, which it's a joke group, labeling you ladies a hate group. How do you respond to stuff like that?
We just brush it off. It's a bunch of nonsense. They called us an anti-government extremist group. Last year alone, we endorsed in 500 school board races. We had 275 wins. So 275 of our candidates are now sitting in elected positions. We're taking part in our government on every level. We're working within the government systems and processes to make change and make things happen. That's how we're supposed to do it.
Well, that's just wonderful. And Tina, I know you're super swamped, and we just appreciate the great work you're doing. I think I ran into you at the Road to the Majority in the green room.
It was either me or Tiffany. I think Tiffany.
It may have been Tiffany.
I was
okay.
Not there. Yeah, people get us interchanged. You know, she's my co-founder. We look kind of similar. We have similar experiences, and sometimes we're even a little interchangeable. So I think it was her.
It was a lot of fun. We had a great visit, and Tina, God bless you, and be sure to tell the president we said hello.
Oh, I'll be sure to do that. Thank you so much for the time.
All right. Tina Deshkovich from Moms for Liberty, folks. They're meeting in Philadelphia. So Steve from Georgia had a great suggestion. And we were able, I don't know how Dylan does this, but he was able to find that Paul Harvey speech, which is so appropriate for the 4th of July. And Dylan, let's go ahead and play that.
I, Paul Harvey, do herewith bequeath unto you something to remember. You may not be able to quote one line from the Declaration of Independence at this moment. Henceforth, you'll always be able to quote at least one line. It's in the last paragraph where you will recall when I remind you, it says, "We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." In the Pennsylvania State House that's now called Independence Hall in Philadelphia, the best men from each of the colonies sat down together. This was a very fortunate hour in our nation's history, one of those rare occasions in the lives of men when we had greatness to spare. These were men of means, well-educated. 24 were lawyers and jurists. 9 were farmers, owners of large plantations. On June 11, a committee sat down to draw up a Declaration of Independence. We were going to tell the British fatherland, no more rule by redcoats. Below the dam of ruthless foreign rule, the stream of freedom was running shallow and muddy. And we were going to light a fuse to dynamite that dam. This pact, as Burke later put it, was a partnership between the living and the dead and the yet unborn. There was no bigotry. There was no demagoguery in this group. All had shared hardships. Jefferson finished a draft of the document in 17 days. Congress adopted it in July, and so much is familiar history. But now, King George III had denounced all rebels in America as traitors. Punishment for treason was hanging. The names now so familiar to you from the several signatures on that Declaration of Independence, the names were kept secret for 6 months for each knew the full meaning of that magnificent last paragraph in which his signature pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. 56 men placed their names beneath that pledge. 56 men knew when they signed that they were risking everything. They knew if they won this fight, the best they could expect would be years of hardship in a struggling nation. And if they lost, they'd face a hangman's rope. But they signed the pledge. And here is the documented fate of that gallant 56. Carter Braxton of Virginia, wealthy planter, trader, saw his ships swept from the seas. To pay his debts, he lost his home and all of his properties and died in rags. Thomas Lynch Jr., who signed that pledge, was a third-generation rice grower, aristocrat, large plantation owner. After he signed, his health failed. His wife and he set out for France to regain his failing health. Their ship never got to France, was never heard from again. Thomas McKean of Delaware was so harassed by the enemy that he was forced to move his family 5 times in 5 months. He served in Congress without pay, his family in poverty and in hiding. Vandals looted the properties of Ellery and Clymer and Hall and Gwinnett and Walton and Hayward and Rutledge and Middleton. Thomas Nelson, Jr. of Virginia, raised $2 million on his own signature to provision our allies, the French fleet. After the war, he personally paid back the loans, wiped out his entire estate, and he was never reimbursed by his government. In the final battle for Yorktown, he, Nelson, urged General Washington to fire on his, Nelson's, own home, which was occupied by Cornwallis. It was destroyed. Thomas Nelson, Jr. had pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. The Hessians seized the home of Francis Hopkinson of New Jersey. Francis Lewis had his home and everything destroyed, his wife imprisoned. She died within a few months. Richard Stockton, who signed that declaration, was captured, mistreated, his health broken to the extent that he died at 51. His estate was pillaged. Thomas Hayward Jr. was captured when Charleston fell. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside while she was dying. Their 13 children fled in all directions for their lives. His fields and grist mill were laid waste. For more than a year, he lived in forests and caves and returned home after the war to find his wife dead, his children gone, his properties gone. And he died a few weeks later of exhaustion and a broken heart. Lewis Morris saw his land destroyed, his family scattered. Philip Livingston died within a few months from the hardships of the war. John Hancock, history remembers best due to a quirk of fate rather than anything he stood for, that great sweeping signature attesting to his vanity, towers over the others, one of the wealthiest men in New England. And yet he stood outside Boston one terrible night of the war, and he said, "Burn Boston, though it makes John Hancock a beggar, if the public good requires it." So he, too, lived up to the pledge. Of the 56, few were long to survive. 5 were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes from Rhode Island to Charleston sacked, looted, occupied by the enemy, or burned. 2 lost their sons in the army. 1 had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 died in the war from its hardships or from its more merciful bullets. I don't know what impression you had of the men who met that summer in Philadelphia. But I think it's important that we remember this about them. They were not poor men. They were not wild-eyed pirates. These were men of means. They were rich men, most of them, and had enjoyed much ease and luxury in their personal living. Not hungry men, certainly not terrorists, not irresponsible malcontents, not fanatical incendiaries. These men were prosperous men, wealthy landowners. They were substantially secure in their prosperity. They had everything to lose. But they considered liberty, and this is as much as I shall say of it, they had learned that liberty is so much more important than security, that they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And they fulfilled their pledge. They paid the price. And freedom was born.
All right, welcome back to the Todd Stearns radio program. Are you extremely proud to be an American? My country, right or wrong, are you extremely proud to be American? You know, this really is the greatest country on the face of the earth, the most exceptional nation on the face of the earth. And no matter how crazy things may get in this country, I still think that we are an amazing country, that we are the best. And that doesn't mean that we can't strive to be even better. That was the whole point of President Trump's campaign, to make America great again. A new Gallup survey shows that extreme pride in America is at a record low number. Only 39% of adults say they are extremely proud to be an American. This is according to a Gallup survey. Gallup's results for the same question over the past 20 years continue to show a downward trend. 28% say they are very proud to be American. When combined with that option, the national pride surges to 67%, which is not bad. But I think we all ought to be extremely proud to be an American. We have freedom in this country, freedom that no other countries on the face of the earth enjoy. We are a good people. And yeah, we've got a lot of crazy stuff happening in Washington, D.C. right now. But that's only because the American people stayed home and many did not vote. Many did not participate in the election process. And when you stay home, when you don't engage in the political process, very bad things happen. And I think that's what happened in the last election cycle. So I'm curious, are you proud to be an American? 844-747-8868 is our number. That's 844-747-8868. Omer Eric Adams is now doubling down, says he is not sorry for what he said to that survivor of the Nazis. And he says that she was rude and she was being disruptive. Really? I go back to, I want to read the quote here. That woman interrupted a meeting where all the participants were acting respectfully and cordially. She disrupted that. She was degrading in how she communicated with me. Man, the guy's real sensitive, right, for a man. Good Lord. I'm not going to allow civil servants to be disrespected, and I'm not going to be disrespected as the mayor of this city. The only person that was disrespected was that lady. I'm the representative of this city, and we need to start having a better dialogue on how we communicate with each other, both locally and nationally. Yeah, that's easy for you to say. You just ripped the woman a new one and accused her of being a slave owner. I mean, really, what's that all about, right? Come on. I mean, that's just nuts. Anyway, Mayor, you can do better, and you need to do better, Mr. Mayor. I mean, that's insulting. And by the way, sir, we are not crackers. I am proud to be a salting American. I'll never get tired of saying that. All right, let's go to the phones here. Charlie in North Carolina. Charlie, are you proud to be an American?
Yes, I'm proud to be American, and I always have. You know, I grew up in the late 60s, early 70s in a politically active family. You know, I used to be a Democrat, and I was proud to be an American then. And when I saw, you know, in 78, when the Iranians, you know, were like saying death to America and stuff, and, you know, and France was getting on us, my blood got up, right? You know, and since that Democratic Party has turned communist, you know, I'm no longer a Democrat. And, you know, the neocons, George W. Bush, I didn't like him. I didn't think he did America right either. And hey, I was proud to be an American still.
Charlie, but, do you remember? You remember back to the Iranian hostage crisis, and they had we would tie a yellow ribbon around the trees, right? Remember that? Everybody had the yellow ribbons. And then we sang the bomb, 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 bomb Iran. Do you remember that?
Well, I remember that, but that wasn't later till like McCain did that, right? That was like sometime in the 90s. But
No. That was during the Iran hostage crisis. They were singing "Bomb Iran."
I was not. You know, I was 18 years old. I was, you know, pretty active. You know, in my social circles, you know, I did not catch that one. But I had buttons that said "F Iran." I was, you know. Then I would have been maybe like, let's go to war. Maybe war is not the answer, but
you were proud to be an American back then. And there was something, I mean, we were, you know, Jimmy Carter, God love him, man, he just, what he did to this country. And then Ronald Reagan comes along and brings mourning to America. And Ronald Reagan, of course, was the first to say, let's make America great again. Charlie, we got to run. Folks, it's been a great week. Want to thank our great team here, Dylan and Parker and all the guys. A lot of people on vacation. Everybody chip it in to bring this show to you. Grace Baker, our executive producer. You get out there and have a great, great Friday. And whatever you do, folks, be sure to go to church this weekend.